Welcome back, everyone. My name is Kaz.
This is Medibot.
And this is episode 88 of the Skulls Cast, wherein we're doing another one of the little things that we did that one time.
Where we hollow past each other.
Yeah. There are Crossways reviews, two Skulls, two reviews of two completely different games, one that I have played to completion and Medibot is not.
Yes, and one that I have played to completion and Kaz has not.
Yeah, and so we're just going to kind of talk it out that way and recommend games.
Or not.
I guess that's allowed. Involved. My game is going to be Dragon Quest IX, Sentinels of the Starry Skies.
And my game will be Jazz Punk.
Right, so why don't you start us off? Tell me all about Jazz
Punk.
Okay,
let me tell you, Kaz. Let me tell you about Jazz Punk. So Jazz Punk, I didn't realize it until the end, but it's an adventure game.
Pass.
Hear me out. Because the reason why I didn't realize it until the end is because it's not beating you over the head with its adventure game-ness. But it's, you know, if we look at what you do in the game, you're this, some kind of secret agent. Mm-hmm. What have you, and you just are given instructions by your boss, and he's like, go here and do this, and there's always some kind of wacky little puzzle you have to do. But there's no failure state, first of all. You simply have not yet done the thing. And the game makes it pretty obvious that there's no failure state. You don't have any sort of visible indication of your health. If you take an extremely long fall, there's a comedic boing effect just to reinforce that there are no consequences here.
Mm-hmm.
And you're encouraged to really, you know, with adventure games, you have to rub every object on every other object in order to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
Here, you rub, and if you do it wrong, your character just says, oh, that doesn't work. Here, you rub every object against every other object. One of them progresses you in the game, and the rest tell you jokes.
Huh.
So, even when you're wrong, you're given a consolation prize of something, you know, just a little quirky one-liner or some visual gag.
Yeah, that's a bug fix that a lot of them could have used.
And, you know, it's played is a first-person perspective controls like a first-person game does. And it's just full of little things that are actually funny that I actually smiled and I think once or twice laughed at.
Huh.
Which, considering that I am literally a heartless machine, I do not have a heart, and I am a mechanical object, is pretty good.
Mm.
If it can get me to laugh and smile, the game never takes itself terribly seriously. It's not terribly long. My first playthrough of it, which was blind, took 2 hours, and that was, you know, getting through all of the story, as it were, and messing around with some amount of the stuff on the side, but not all of it. I hadn't discovered all of it on my first try. It's very stylized. The people are not at all intended to look realistic, but to very well symbolize people. They're just this nice icon.
Mm.
Icons are important. Also important in the game are sort of, you know, imaginations of what the future would be like, but from, you know, a few decades in the past. You know, once it's the future, you know, what did they imagine as the future? And the game does a lot of neat stuff with that. It makes good use of the medium of the video game, because it does weird, some interesting sort of graphical perspective tricks at some point where there's like, oh, they're hiding behind this tree, but the tree is this, you know, perfectly thin thing and the person is very big, but you see them only peeking out if you're viewing the tree at the correct angle, and then they just sort of like turn to being flat if you rotate around to the other side. So, you know, cute little graphical things like that. I guess it's, you know, it's, and it, but it is an adventure game. Right? You just do the thing and you follow the story and there are little puzzles. The puzzles are never terribly obtuse. The longest I was ever stuck on anything could be measured in minutes on one hand. And usually that was less a result. Actually, the thing that stuck me the most was not even a what do I do here, but where is the thing that I know that I need? And I, you know, my guess was correct. I just couldn't find it. There are also hidden at various points throughout the game almost little, like, mini-games.
All right, what kind of mini-games?
Well, some of them are pretty simple. There's one that puts you in sort of first-person mode of the destroying a car mini-game from Street Fighter, where they set it up, you know, there's a nice little homage to classic arcade Street Fighter, and they do... You know, your character versus a compact sedan, and you know, you occasionally will perform Vue's hurricane kick, and you know, just a little asides like that. Like we wanted to put in a little joke here, so we did. What other little mini games? There's a point where you pick up a toaster. And you immediately turn around, and then you have shooting gallery ducks appear. You have to fire the toast at them.
Ah, okay.
And just little cute things like that. Probably
there's a lot of WarioWare style micro games that you just sort of find.
Yeah. Just little funny things happen, and it's actually funny because it's not. No joke lasts too long. They went for a lot of just little short. Quick comedic jabs, and so even if one doesn't appeal to you, it's over already. And if you like it, you can click on it more, and it goes deeper. So it's just this really, I guess the word I want is tight. It is very compact. I didn't feel like they wasted anything. It's dense. Everything is either in service of advancing the game or telling you a joke, and I think that is an actual feature to have, is telling the player a joke. Many, you know, Swamp Goose is basically a game about telling the player a joke. Many of my games are about that, and so I consider that to be an extremely, you know, that's not wasting my time. That is a feature. That is content.
Okay, well, where did Jazz Punk come from?
I don't even know.
Okay. Well, all right. There's the gameplay origin, like the nugget of
right. Like it controls like your bog standard FPS.
Right.
Last
right. So
and
there's
most.
There's that kind of coming from.
Yeah.
There's, and then you also said like legacy of adventure games, whatever those kinds of origins. But also, I mean, like who produced it?
Oh no, that like I don't know the guy. Like this is it's an independent game, I should say.
Okay.
And I embarrassingly enough, I didn't really do any note taking before this podcast.
we played it recently.
Yeah.
And thought about it.
But it was a small team, you know, just independently produced. But it's this nice, efficiently. It's efficient, it's dense, it's compact, and it does things that I personally like. A lot. I liked a lot of the gags. You know, if you've never heard of or played Street Fighter, you know, that gag goes over your head. You know, when they have reference-based gags, you know, knowing what they're referring to is important, but a lot of it is just something kind of funny and silly happens. Like, you know, You play a round of mini golf, and then he says turn to the caddy and choose your club, and your choices are like, he already took the golf club, so your choices are like a pool cue, and like other, you know, things with the right shape, but they're wrong. It's just a little bit of cute absurdism. A lot of just little cute absurdism.
Okay, so it also has origins in classic cartooning and comic writing.
Yes, I would say that out of all the games I have played that have, I think, attempted to be funny, this one is probably near the top of the list in terms of success.
Mm.
You know, I guess I have the weakness of having thought too much about comedy, that sometimes, unless something really catches me off guard, I'll be like, you know, rather than laughing as a reaction, I will say, yes, very good. Yeah, I have calculated that your joke is good. And I come across as a gigantic toolbox for not just laugh at the joke, Medibot.
The Apple stamp. Now, laughing is for stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
You know, that's you know, laugh to be polite. If it's a video game or what thing in sitting and laughing at it, I always feel weird sitting and laughing when I'm by myself.
Mm-hmm.
So that might stop you a little from that.
I'm streaming it, though, so I sort of had an audience.
Yeah. Oh, well, okay. Yeah.
This is a game that...
I thought it said Adult Swim Games on it, though.
No, they might have published it.
Right.
They've published indie stuff.
Sure, but as a publisher, they have... A style that they're going for.
That's true.
They're probably going to have more support for projects of that nature, maybe even for, like, here's a writer. Like we have.
Yeah, I guess I don't know the level of involvement. Maybe it's only sort of, maybe it would be better to call it small studio rather than independent, and we could spend hours arguing in circles about the meaning of those words.
Oh,
so let's not.
Let's do that later.
Yeah.
Once we've both taken notes and learned what we think.
Who made this game that I am praising? I recommend Jazzpunk. I recommend it. Just sort of...
What's it going for?
15? Get it on the Steam?
I would not pay $15 for that. I don't value comedy that highly. At $15, I would want a good graphic novel collection. Like, that's would I pay? Okay, you can pay $20 or $25 for those new, but I would want the, like, 100-page, like, good art every page, like, full production house, graphic novel. Ah, digest it and keep it around and love it, add it to my library forever. So I guess I balk a little at that price tag, but you recommend it, so that's fine.
I recommend it, but I guess I'll say it does something that I value a lot that other games have done poorly or not at all.
I've never seen a game do Jazzpunk as well as Jazzpunk does.
Yes, and you know maybe this is just hitting my personal tastes very well.
Maybe Earthworm Jim. There are a lot of sight gags and classic cartoon.
Yeah, Earthworm Jim definitely can present a lot of the same vibes as Jazzpunk does. Earthworm Jim has the side vantage of also being a crushingly hard platformer. And if that's what you want, that's great. Jazzpunk, does not provide that challenge and also does not provide that frustration.
It also fails to pass my test of video game categories.
It has an end state.
Doesn't it have a loss condition? You can't lose Jazzpunk. Maybe you can... I don't know. Maybe
you lose
if
you don't like any of the jokes.
Yeah.
Then you both lose.
The loss is a moral loss.
Yeah. Yeah. It's rather than a like end of game session.
Game state loss.
Yeah.
It's more like well, I just feel nasty and depressed, and this wasn't funny. Was there anything either the positive or negative about the presentation of people? Something that it did, any serious gaffes, something that it did wrong, any game that has, like, a lot of writing or comedy risks, offense.
Right, okay. Well, because it is sort of inspired by sort of the classic, I said sort of a lot, by that certain era of secret agent-type films, the women are mostly there as set dressing. Your main antagonist is a man. I think you get gendered as male at some point, but you're never seen. And the women are pretty much in the background. Well, actually, then there's that one woman who's working alongside the main antagonist, but she doesn't do a whole lot. Really, no, you're the person in this game who does a whole lot.
Yeah.
No one else does a whole lot but you. And even though I think they might use a male pronoun for your character, who has a name, Polly Blank. see, the game is good. at some point, so it's a pretty good name. You know, someone I think refers to you by a male pronoun at one point, and then at one point you put on a wig and lipstick, but it gets played pretty straight. You know, they say, like, we need you to trick this guy. He's down drinking and he's a sucker for women. So put on this wig and lipstick and, you know, steal his briefcase.
That's inheriting a lot from, again, classic cartoons. Yeah. Bugs Bunny dresses as a woman to fool whoever he's
he's fooling this week.
Like, every other episode.
Right.
And, you know, that itself is a product of its own time. So I fear there's something that we've
inherited.
Some drawback that we've inherited. And that's, I don't know, maybe excusable, maybe not, up to you.
It's not a major part of the game.
Yeah. I mean, the people
in it.
It
is required, I guess, but.
The people in it look like the bathroom signs.
Yeah, it's highly stylized. And I like that a lot. Because no information is lost, and it makes it unique and memorable, and we avoid awkward, you know, this model looks a little off, and, you know, Assassin's Creed Unity Broccoli Man problems. I will never be able to look at that Broccoli Man.
Broccoli Man.
I cannot deal with it. I couldn't deal with it. The first time I saw that picture, I saw broccoli with eyes. But the art is much more focused on, I guess, evoking the correct symbol rather than anything, I guess, resembling realism. Which is fine by me.
That's important.
I mean, I play Yoshi's Cookie. So.
Right, that's sticking up for art.
Yeah.
You know?
It doesn't, like, have to look like the thing. It just has to make me think of the thing.
Forget photoreality. I am so...
Forget any reality.
I am beyond sick of photoreal graphics in games. Give me your near cel-shaded, cartoonish, like, glow monster game any day over... generic FPS photoreal. Look at this cloth texture trash.
Look at all the stubble on our protagonist's chin.
Yeah, that.
I like jazz punk. I liked it a lot.
Okay, so strong recommendation.
I guess downsides. I mean, like most comedy, it's not as great the second time around. And there's a fair amount of, like. The achievements are mostly a, like, go off and do this wacky joke we put in here. So, I looked at the list of achievements after beating the game once, and it's like, oh, something wacky to do. And, you know, just sort of like, I didn't think to go that way, but there's another joke that way. I would have to talk to someone who watched my stream and then played it to see if it loses anything. Because I played it, I streamed it from start to finish. And again, it's like, comedy is never funny the second time around. And so, I might have accidentally done a disservice by showing it before it could be experienced for themselves. So I get not a ton of deep replay value. I guess that's a symptom of adventure games in general. You know, you play the story and you read the book, and, you know, you might come back to it after a while the same way you might with an actual novel or something like that. You want to revisit it. But it's not, you know, and I don't know, I hesitate to call this a downside. I call it more of a fact. Some games are more replayable than others. And I guess some game genres carry with them more capacity and expectation of replayability than others. You know, if if your platformer doesn't have a lot of replayability, that is a moke against. But if your graphic novel maybe doesn't have a ton of it, you know, I want to see these other little things. Because the game is already pretty short and compact to begin with.
Mm.
And there's no branching of the story, just of side. There's the trunk, and then off the trunk are just little side activities that do not in any way affect the main story, as far as I know. Maybe I just haven't found it yet.
Hmm.
I liked it. I liked jazz punk because it's a good feeling kind of game.
Hmm.
Has that good video game feel. Good mouth feel.
Hmm.
Your mouth comes up a lot in this game.
Devouring.
At one point, there's a side thing you can do, where you have to smuggle a carrier pigeon somewhere, and you do it by swallowing it, and then you get to the next place and you just vomit it up.
Ah.
And everybody's like, you see the bird fly, and a huge puff of feathers coming out of your mouth, and it's just. It was sort of funny when it happened, because you had forgotten about it.
I did catch some of that stream, and I think that one thing you haven't mentioned is how well the graphic and sound elements work together to create any given... Like, any given frame could be a comic beat.
Yeah.
And it's like, you have to take your shoes off, and you hit the interact button, and there's this, pacha! And you throw the shoes at them. And there's just this... There's nothing humorous in itself about removing your shoes. But the way it happens and the game that's around it and the sound that it conveys and the means by which you do it all combine to make this moment.
The sound effects, the sound direction in this game is definitely very... I guess I failed to mention it because it always felt so correct that nothing about it like jumped out as wrong.
Right, that's one of the way that we criticize, say, fonts or layout. A correct font is invisible. You never notice that it's there because you've just read the information, and it fits and it works.
But definitely the audio presentation, both music and sound effects, are definitely very strong. Excellent work by the team for that. The visual elements. Again, I mentioned, you know, I like the sort of iconographic style of a lot of things. You know, people just appear as icons.
Mm-hmm.
These extremely simplified shapes. And then, like, a lot of the more detailed visual elements being, like, you know, this was the state-of-the-art technology a few decades ago. And but then, you know, we try and just shove it into the future, and so we keep the aesthetic the same, but now it's all lasers and stuff. You know, that worked really well.
Mm.
This game is very cohesive. It is this dense, cohesive mass. And I think that... I mean that as a compliment. Let's be perfectly clear. That this is intended to praise the team that made this game.
All right. Well, there you have it. Jazz
punk.
What even in the world?
What even in the world is jazz punk?
I think I can talk
about...
You got
a video game.
I do have a video game. Mine is, I think, the opposite in every possible way it could be. Because, well, except for, like, graphics. But anyway, Dragon Quest IX, Sentinels of the Starry Skies... is one of the millionth sequels to Dragon Quest, Dragon Warrior, which I grew up with. I had, you know, Dragon Warrior games as this, like, corner point of my knowledge of video games. And something that, I guess, fundamental, there was just no other game like that when I had played it, and it had... It's a little charm to it, and this text crawl. A slime draws near. And then there's this music, and it works together, and there are these cute little monsters. And again, everyone is little symbols or whatever. But if you flash forward to the far-flung future of Dragon Quest IX, a lot of things have changed. In particular, the graphics. All of the character models more closely resemble Akira Toriyama's drawings of the one way that he can draw anything.
This is Goku's.
Yeah, so there's... So everything looks like Dragon Ball Z people, which... That's a fact. Who knows? Like,
you like the style or you don't.
If you like that, if you want it, then you have it in this video game. That's fine. If not, if you don't know anything about Dragon Ball Z or any of that stuff, then it won't get in the way. So that's a recommendation of sorts. As a Dragon Quest game, you're still doing the old turn-based combat with the text crawl, which is fine. A lot of the monsters are recognizable from the history of Dragon Quest. There are a lot of... there are a lot of slimes in this game.
Metal slime.
There's slime, there's metal slime, there's liquid metal slime, there's slime stack, there's metal slime stack. There's King Slime.
King Slime.
I think there's like King Slime stack too, or Metal King Slime.
What?
Like any combination of modifiers.
Put a lot of adjectives in front of slime.
It's like Slime Bailoff. Whatever you want. Obstinate slime. It's there. Plenty of cute monsters to recommend. And so for someone like me who has played through a couple Dragon Warrior games, and there were a couple of like cute callbacks or like memories of those monsters, and that's kind of cute. It starts you off as one character, and your character class is fixed. And you can equip certain stuff and get certain abilities. And then... After the first like chapter or so of the game, because it's sort of loosely divided into progress points as you go through, you will get to recruit other party members and open up character classes for like whatever you can. You know, they're like basic character classes that you advance through and get abilities for, and you can retrain as something else, or if you satisfy some like mini game like requirements, then you will be able to go to this other character class, these like advanced classes,
advanced,
say, that open up other abilities and equip certain things. There's like equipments and abilities, and then passive abilities too, and like things. And the only thing that's dimensionally different from any of this stuff, you know, why do I even bother to describe it? It's Dragon Warrior. You press the attack command and you do damage. But there's blocking and dodging. There's defending. There's spending magic on magic spells. And then, you know, like, charming monsters or doing status effects to monsters and all that stuff. That's the same as it ever has been, really.
They established a lot of the expectations of the genre, and so they continue to largely abide by them.
Yeah. Which is neutral, I think.
Yeah.
The one thing that they've done, like, in addition to that, is the tension meter.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's called tension. It's been a while.
Tension
since
is a good meter.
There are certain abilities that manage your tension, either by raising yours, lowering others, lowering others, that will add to this meter in steps. It's really weird how they choose to do it, because it's like they quantify it as like plus 10, plus 15, plus 50, plus 100. So it's something like that. You go like 5, 10, 15, 50, 100. And it just takes these... I don't know why they quantify it in that way. It may have originally had some specific mathematical mechanical meaning, but that's been lost. And so now you can just think of it as, like, however many stages it is. It's like, okay, stage 4. And at the maximum stage, it's like, 100, that you do a little spin-around DBZ power-up sequence, like purple flashing stuff. And you have there's a great mechanical effect to this in terms of incoming and outgoing damage. So that's a thing. It's part of this little battle system that they have that is different than other RPG turn-based video games that I've played. The story is just sort of there. I don't think it's great. It's functional. That's never how this kind of game lives or dies, really. I mean, it might be... It might be what you're after if you're going for just sort of a vaguely interactive, sort of decent story. As far as that goes, I think it's a little bland compared to something like Lufia 2, say. Lufia 2 had a really good story for being the game that it was, being that kind of turn-based, vaguely interactive, kind of easy RPG. I guess this is a lot more challenging than a lot of Dragon Quest-style games that I thought, so I had a personal kind of interest in that. It gets a heck of a lot easier once you have more party members. The first chapter of the game is like this might be the hardest part of the entire game just because you're on your own.
You're alone.
Any like life-restoring things just will fail to function because there's no one to use them on you because you just fell on your face. And that's it. A lot of the side quests, of which there are way, way too many, are either so dumb and obvious that you do them immediately, or so obtuse that you would never figure them out without a fact. I think there's value to be had in either of those styles, and I far prefer that to any kind of like achievement pop-up on whatever.
Yeah,
that's a sort of in-game cooked down version of achievements, and even still I think they go a little too far with that, especially with how many quests and stuff are in it. So like, you talk to this person, is it just going to be dialogue, is it this side quest? Yeah, figuring out what to do for any specific side quest is madness. Figuring out what to do in general to advance yourself or your state, not so bad. I do bring up Lufia 2 because it has the same kind of chunky story to it, where each place that you go to is its own contained story within the greater story, more or less. And so you're never... You never need to be lost in terms of the, like, vast... I am on a mission from God to obtain the animes so that I can...
I obtain the power sphere so I can summon the power snake.
All worlds and dimensions are concerned... No, it's not all worlds and dimensions. You have a very clear goal in any given place. You go to the place, they have a problem, you solve it. Okay, that's the classic high fantasy
stuff. Life
of the
wandering murder hobo.
It's... Yeah, well, yeah... You don't really ever have a home in this, unless... Nah.
You solve your problems with violence?
Yeah.
Sounds like...
Almost universally. There are a couple of ways
classic
that you can...
dungeoneering, like, murder hobo.
You can do somewhat the opposite of that. Like, some of the requirements for advanced class unlocks are pretty damn severe. They require a rather careful mastery of the game in basically every way that it challenges you. So not only in, like, defeating the appropriate monsters by the appropriate means to get, like, this generic, like, power, say, to advance your cause, but also in terms of, like, what specific combination of moves to use in order to enact this specific scenario. I don't know if I like that or not, because it felt like way too much, because I just wanted to wear a jaunty hat already. So I find this hat, and I'm like, wait, who can wield this? Who can wear this jaunty hat?
Wield hat.
Because it does change your character model to do it, which is another thing I love about RPGs, little video games, little character customizations. I love that. And so I found the hat, I wanted to use it. You can't. You can't wear that.
You don't understand that hat.
Only fancy class can wear this. I'm like, okay, fine. How do you get fancy class? Okay, you meet someone who already looks like that. Then they give you the quest to, like,
to be fancy,
do this.
Like them.
And they require the most arcane, crazy crap from you that you probably need, like, a different advanced class to even do. But let me tell you, actually achieving that felt like something. And then you got to wear the hat. And so it gave you that... It gives you a very real challenge, and then a very real reward. And I do like
that. You get to wear the fancy hat. That's a real reward.
What I don't like is how the game paces all this stuff. For starters, there is way too much stuff in this game. It is too large, it has too much dialogue, it has too many specific areas, the individual areas are too large. The ingredient list for mixing things is too big, there's too much different equipment, there are too many classes with too many different abilities. Given all that, you can pretty much bumble your way through the game without understanding much. You can use equipment that you buy and basic classes to succeed at the final boss or whatever the plot of the game without too much effort. You can basically find your own level of challenge or
complexity.
Yeah. You can find your own complexity in it. If you want 100% completion, woe unto you, because they put so many different individual items collectible from so many different means and sources. Like, there are spots on the world map that periodically refresh that you can gather from. There are monsters that you beat up to get their stuff, and it's a rare drop from a rare monster, and you're just ruined. And they don't give you any indication of what those are. And you need it as this component of a subcomponent of another thing that you make so that you can have the +3 damage against shrews. And, again, woe betide anyone who steps into the crafting of Dragon Quest IX. I was there. It's one of those things that I've found as a recurring complaint among games that I've been playing recently and games that remind me of others from the past, in terms of they came up with all this like crafting stuff first.
Yeah.
And then said, here's how you craft everything. And then failed to incorporate it into the game as it is played by players in any meaningful way.
Mm-hmm.
So there will be like item 25 on the list that has dirt cheap components or things that you can just sort of buy or reduce from other components or whatever that's very easy to come by and requires two things. You mix it and then it's this kind of powerful weapon or armor or just more powerful than whatever you can get. And then you have that and it's great. And that's item number 25 out of a list of 1,000. And then all this other stuff, if you want to make it, it's like, where do I even get this? How do I collect that? Was that a rare drop? Is it a rare harvest? When do the harvest points come back? Do I have to go to another one? Do I have to find different enemies? Do I... what? Like, what's
do I need to talk to a botanist about this?
Can I buy it? Can I harvest it? Can I find it as a drop? Do I find it as a treasure? Is there a way to get more than one of it? Who knows? And it's like all this stuff existed in this perfect, like, combination of stuff, things that you find, whatever, and then they just sort of threw it at the game, not even knowing what the game would be, and let it lie. And I despise that.
Mm.
Crucially...
overcomplicated, not really cohesive with the rest of the game crafting system.
Right. Crucially, in two different places, there are recipes that involve ingredients that you can purchase if you know where to go, and there's a free warp spell or whatever that lets you like zip between the points. And then you make the thing, and you can sell it for more than the cost of the ingredients.
The money-making game.
This happens with at least 3 of the recipes, and you can use one to like buy up into being able to buy into the next one. So if you do have perfect knowledge of the game, you can get an arbitrarily high money amount for nothing. Well, nothing. I mean, you're still performing the steps, but
you're tired.
I really think that's wrong. Like an exploit.
It
like
is
that
a questionable
happen.
Design choice, certainly, because if as soon as you make, you know, if it just costs time to and not any risk, or, you know, you just press make me 99 of these and then you walk back to the store and buy 99 ingredients. You do that over and over again. That's not really interesting or challenging. There's no risk there.
Right.
There's no decision point.
You have presented a new kind of game that's a math problem.
Right.
And it asks, okay, can you solve this math problem? And the success state is you have all the money.
Yes.
And the failure state is you haven't done anything with the crafting system. And then you're just sort of good.
And you're good.
But I don't like it. And it reeks of not being, like, thought about too hard.
Right. Like, it's clearly an optimal thing to do if you're attempting to maximize money.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it's like, you know, what's the downside? The downside is that the game is tedious now. And I don't like that being the source of tension is, do I want to be bored in exchange for a resource? Even though that's
right,
kind of how jobs work.
If you perform these steps, then you're boring.
Yeah.
If you fail to perform them, you're an idiot.
Right. Either way, I don't want you at my birthday party.
Right. There's no winning there.
Yeah.
Of course I did this exploit once I figured it out or heard about it. And of course I had all the money. And so I'm like, oh, okay, this whole vector of balance for the game is just gone. It's
absent.
Anything that I want at all that costs any amount of money, I can make. And so that's no longer an effective gate. Not that I really like my money amount as a gate exactly.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of something that classic Dragon Warrior did a lot. You could get any of the game's armor from, like, right away. There are perhaps three total items that you could not purchase, but you could, like, then there were, like, the legendary things. There was, like, super endgame stuff that you just... You needed to go adventuring to go get. So that's like hard gated. Everything else was just money. So if you wanted, you could fight 4,000 slimes and get the 4,000 gold necessary for buying the best armor available for purchase. It tended to work out pretty well because they knew that. You know, they knew this was their soft gate, so they made it so that you could, if you want to do this, but more likely, you would just sort of gradually work your way into it.
Right. I guess... So, on one hand, it's like most players will do the thing that's more fun, which is not grind 4,000 slimes, but just play the game normally. But on the... I guess... You're basically acknowledging that something is broken, and you're patching it up with how the player feels.
Soft gates are still fine.
Like, I'm trying to formulate some kind of thought here. It's just like, because money is this like gate in a lot of games where. You know, if money exists in the game, it's probably being used to gate something. You know, either that or you just have so much of it that it becomes meaningless and you might as well have infinite money because you are never, if you never run out of it and you're never worried about running out of it, you have unlimited of it in a practical sense.
Right.
So we put that there. By putting it there immediately... We tell the player, like, by the way, eventually you can be a cool person wearing this all day, and it'll be great. And on the other hand, it's like, maybe this is just me being, again, way too much of an actual literal machine. I don't like being punished for optimality.
Oh, you mean
like
in the sense of it is tedious to get the,
right?
The
it's you know like this is mathematically the correct move, and it will drive me mad. But if I don't do it, then constantly I have this voice in my head telling me you could be doing this.
Oh
better.
Man, you could have had all the money.
You could have had all the money if only you could endure it. And you know I recognize that as the player, I have the choice to not do that. But it messes with me because I have this particular mental compulsion.
Right. But in Dragon Warrior, I absolutely forgive it because there aren't like money exploits, and as a soft gate, it's fairly intact. It's also fairly contained. There are only perhaps 20 things to purchase in the entire game, And so the system for having each one have a cost allows you to obtain that money, evaluate whether or not you want the next thing, or whether it's like, are you really hurting for damage, whatever. And it sits and it's there and it's fine. And there are other like gates throughout the game that you're going through sort of at the same time, going and obtaining the magic key, for instance, so that you can open a specific door somewhere, which you need to do. It's a matter of going to the right place and spending some money on the key, which is, in general, no big deal. So it fits within the game to have soft gates of that kind. In, flash forward again, Dragon Quest IX, it makes no sense at all. Not only because the money is like exploitably obtained through, honestly, not all that much time. If we're, you get to that point in the game and then play money-making game for a while, then you have all the money, then you can buy whatever you want. Okay, cool. The problem there is that nothing for sale is valuable.
Mm.
So not only is the system now way too vast...
An infinite amount of useless money.
Yeah, the system is way too vast and exploitable and pointless, which is a reason to not have it at all. So not only get rid of your stupid money system, get rid of your stupid crafting system. I honestly think the game would be a lot better without lacking one, certainly, but perhaps even not having both. Just take gold out of this. You didn't do it right. Forget it.
There you go.
Take the crafting system out of this. You didn't do it right. Forget it. The ways they interact are also pretty poor. So we're in Dragon Warrior 1, we have a kind of instruction about the value of things. If you want 5 more attack, you pay this much, and that's that. In Dragon Quest IX, we have like scattershot contradictory lessons about the value of things, where this thing is worth this much, this other thing is worth this different amount. Is it the same? Should I be able to equate these? There's way too much stuff. I can't keep track of all this. And so you don't have that as an underpinning. It fails as a soft gate. It fails as a teaching tool. It just plain fails. Crafting system in this is dumb. It has a cute little guy called Crackpot. It's a talking pot. And you throw things into him and he like does a little dance and he spits it out.
That's cute.
There's a lot to recommend flavorfully about Dragon Quest IX. Things are cute. They look pretty cool. It's not too hard, I guess. When I tried to do a solo character run, it was very hard.
Mm.
But like once you get more
no one is strong members, enough to make it on their own.
Yeah, no kidding. When you get additional party members, that made it like a little easier. A lot of the classes and the like class rank up points that you get are pretty poorly balanced with respect to one another. They also kind of reek of the same problem with the crafting system of being like designed in advance and not really figuring out what would actually work or be useful. So if after crafting item number 25, which is the world's second most powerful axe that I can just make from garbage, then I also want to be this basic class who gets axe moves, and so that makes it better. But there's like the game equates that to the other character class, which is only spear moves, except the complementary spear of this other thing requires different ingredients that are impossible to obtain, and it also has 3 less attack power for like no reason. It's weird. All of this stuff looks so completely right when you just sort of read it in a fac, and when you play the game it feels so completely wrong to do. One thing that I can recommend if you're just picking up a grindy JRPG with gold and slimes and stuff in it and you want Sentinels of the Starry Skies, which could happen, is punching. The punching is pretty dang good in the game. You can rank up punching, never want for a weapon, and then have moves that support that, and then it would be fine.
Just be the punch master.
And then you can... That's valid and viable. a lot of the... Oh, right, I failed to mention. The other part of why money is useless and stupid in this game is that after... I forget which chapter exactly, but after one of the, like, chunky chapter points in the game, you get all kinds of armor for basically nothing. You go back to, like, the hotel, and you talk to characters from the, like, history of Dragon Quests going all the way back to 2. And they, talking to them once, they will give you their equipment. And all of this equipment is good. Most of it, like, strictly better than, like, even the other armor that you got on the previous floor by talking to this person. And almost all of it is better than anything else that you can buy, certainly by that point. Some of it you can wear until the end of the game and not want for other armor. I don't know why you would do that. If after JRPG that you've played 6? Have you played 6?
Yeah.
Final Fantasy 6?
Yeah, I've played 5 and 6.
Okay, imagine after your party splits up and you do the South Figaro thing with Locke.
Yeah.
Okay, and then everybody comes back together.
Yeah.
Okay. Imagine you had endgame armor after that.
What?
And you just got to keep it for like forever. Never had to equip them again.
What?
And you found other things, but meh, it's worse, so why bother? Don't need it. And you didn't have to pay anything for it. But what you did have to do was go to an elevator, select the next menu option in it, talk to the one person that's in there in the room that looks the same as the other room, and it's just a different person, and then go back to the basement. This is what you have to do in Dragon Quest IX to get the best armor. I mean, I don't know if it's best, but it's pretty damn good. And it makes you look like a different goblin. It's weird.
It's weird.
I don't know why that is such a baffling decision. I think the model that they were going for was something where they put it in kind of central location to the game world, a place where players would kind of frequently revisit, and then, you know, go every time you pass through, then you talk to a person, hey, you get their armor. Hey, it looks kind of cute on my character. I'll put it on. And then you go on. Then you come back later, you go to the next one. But they don't set it up that way. They set it up so that you can get to this town having not gone anywhere and never played another Dragon Quest game. Visit all the menu items in sequence and get all the armor that you would ever want.
Yay, new armor!
I know. It's just... It's such a baffling failure with so many different things in it.
Baffling failure. That's me.
There's way too much stuff in Dragon Quest IX. So if you don't care about completionism, and you just want to play a JRPG and, like, see cool slimes and beat
slimes.
Up wolves and stuff,
don't hurt slime.
This is a great game. You never have to worry about any of that crap.
Please don't hurt slime. We love slime.
That's one of the quests.
Is don't hurt slime?
Yeah, you have to rescue a pet slime.
Ah.
But they don't tell you that it's a slime. You talk to children, and they're like, oh, we're missing our pet. Well, he's round and wiggly and a little pointy.
Yeah,
slime. Yeah, and then you rescue their slime.
Boing.
I would never want to do every quest in this thing. Way too many quests.
Too many quests.
The plot is serviceable, rather childish, and not all that great. I guess serviceable is just the best word I can come up with to describe it.
Adequate.
Baseline.
Boilerplate.
There are a lot of good jokes.
Jokes. I like jokes in games.
One of the... That's probably its strongest suit, actually. It's all the jokes. Like, all throughout. Little pun names for, like, every last freaking monster. But you go to the beach in one of the, like, mid to late game areas, and you'll run into the handsome crab. Like handsome cab from London, from the... It's a pun. It was funny for me!
Yeah!
If you read, like... Okay, fine. If you read...
I'm illiterate, so...
Sherlock Holmes stuff, that's... That's a good joke. There are lots of good jokes.
That's fine.
Mostly to the two.
Now that you've explained it, I can analyze the joke as being correct and good.
Oh my god. But there's lots of good pun names for monsters and items and charm. The game is poorly paced and cannot find its own tone. Yeah, that's it. That's it. That's pretty Dragon much all Quest I got 9. For criticisms.
Poorly Dancing paced, in the Starry Sky.
Can't find its own tone.
Jazz Punk knows exactly what kind of tone it has.
Yeah.
It is tremendous.
Just nails it. Wedding Quake
was. I went back for round two on Wedding. Oh, I'm like,
that was a strong,
I want to learn more about this. That was
a strong joke. Hell, I might replay Dragon Quest IX just to see if I can do something dumb.
What kind of something?
Challenge. I would. It would be a my challenge, and they would not. They would not give me a quest reward for it, but I would dress up all my four little goblins as skulls.
Skulls!